Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And we're here to discuss. We missed last week.
I know. First of all, I miss you. I do. I mean, you know, and let's just tell everybody it was your fault.
It was.
Yeah.
It was your fault. You couldn't do Tuesday, and then I said, no problem, I can do Wednesday, and then Wednesday I couldn't do it, turned out.
We tried Thursday, and we figured there's just no news on a Thursday.
No, Tuesday's better. Tuesday's the best. Tuesday. Well, Monday's actually okay, but, you know.
No, but you get the culmination of the weekend, all the mishaps of the weekend and the news.
Right, and then the follow-up analysis that happens on Monday.
Right. You couldn't have picked a better day than Tuesday.
No.
So, what is happening? Anything?
No, nothing. I think it's pretty dull.
Right. So, we'll get together Thursday.
Okay, I'll talk to you later.
Oh, listen, you know what? Last week, I outlined some notes, and I sent them over to you, which we didn't talk. And it basically said this. Apple, Google, Europe. Goodbye. That was the extent of the news last week. It was a lot of it.
Yeah.
But it was really I guess the three things that we're looking at right now is the Triple E. Triple E's earnings, economics, and Europe. Seriously, those are the three things that are always important.
That's what everyone's looking at.
Yeah, that's it. And Europe being the big daddy of them all, it just won't stop the news flow. But anyway,
I'm a little annoyed by the fact that this hasn't resolved.
Well, the G20 says you fellas better do this by the weekend, by the 23rd of October. We want this whole thing cleaned up, like it's a mess in somebody's bedroom.
Yeah, and like their kids.
Right.
You're not going to the football game if you don't clean up your room.
And then it's like, right, and I'll help you, but then you walk out of the room and say, I'm not helping him. That's exactly what happened. Geithner was over there, and the whole G20 says, yeah, IMF, we'll pitch in, and then they walk out, oh, we're not doing anything. We're not helping. It's their problem. Hmm. And then the day afterwards, you know, Merkel comes out and says, while we promised or somebody promised the 23rd or they told us to, let's just be real. That's kind of dreamy. That's high hopes. And I think she used the word dreams. And that there's no way this is going to be resolved. This is the prime minister of Germany saying this. The one that's really holding all of the purse strings on all this.
Yeah, no, saying, Germany is the key to the whole thing.
Right. Saying, we're not going to have this resolved by next week. Are you kidding me? Are you dreaming? You know, I mean, everybody's getting their hopes up a little bit too high here. So that took the wind out of the markets on Monday, only to return for some unknown reason on Tuesday. The wind was filling the sails again. And who knows? We're kind of in alternating 1 or 2 day mode right now. You know, it goes down for a day, it goes up for a day, it goes down for a day. And there's always a reason why, and it usually has to do with some rumor or something. I'll tell you something. I want to ask you something, actually. You and I have talked about this, but How long can this whole process of newspapers just saying things without credible sources go on?
Well, let's see. The first time I noticed it, not personally, but in my research, was around in the late 1800s. Uh-huh. So I guess it could be a while.
I mean, it just seems like if it was done by a company spreading all sorts of rumors and things like that, they'd be in trouble by the SEC or whoever. But today we saw, again, carefully crafted and planned and executed just right. We saw that The Guardian, with an unnamed source, of course, came out with a comment that there's been an agreement by Germany and France. They agreed to a 2 trillion euro package. Now, the 2 trillion number has been flowing around for a while. So I guess everybody believed it. Now, when we saw it, we're like, no way. After what Merkel has said, what Sarkozy said, and the rating service, there's no way this is going to happen. So, meanwhile, the markets, if you look at a chart at 3 o'clock, went vertical. And the euro went straight up as well. Dollar came down. And the next thing you know, about a half hour later, wouldn't you know it, it's declared to be false. But still, there's so much, you know, the shorts cover. They're not getting back in at this point. The longs are now, what the heck, I'm here already. And everything just kind of hangs out and stays around where it is. So you get these crazy moves with instantaneous action within minutes, and then that's why we're getting this kind of move up and down, because once, you know, things are found out to be false, or those things are worse, like Spain was downgraded again tonight. It's like the second time in a week. By the same company, Moody's downgraded them twice in 1 week.
Yeah, Moody's is trying to make a point.
You know, or a name for themselves. Now, what do you think about that? I mean,
last time
Spain was downgraded, nobody looked and nothing happened. Spain's yields went up a little bit. Euro kind of went down for a half hour, then came back up. And then the same thing today. The exact same thing. The euro went down and now came back up.
It seems as though you can present two pieces of news in series.
Mm-hmm.
One says, oh, bad things are going to happen. And so then bad things kind of happen. And then the other one comes out and says, we were wrong. And so the thing makes up for it and goes back to some high number. Or you can have good news that drives stuff up, and then the bad news won't negate it. We're in that moment. Did you remember we were doing this show? It was a long time ago, well, a year ago, and you kept making this comment that the market wants to do something. No matter what the news, it interprets everything because it has its own mindset. It's like a super organic in the sense of a cultural anthropologist, and it just wants to go up.
The bad news is good news, and the good news is good news.
Right.
You know, or bad news is good news, and good news is better. So we expect all these negative things to be happening right now. So therefore, whatever happens, if it's bad, it's like, okay, I got it. We knew that. We dealt with that last week, and here's the reality. And as long as it's not worse. Or even in the case of today, Goldman Sachs comes out with a massive, massive loss, $450 billion loss.
Where's our short on that one? Yeah.
Okay, $450 billion loss. Now, I don't know if you watched Goldman Sachs today, but pre-market it goes down, and then everybody says, well, I guess that could be the last of it. There was some extraneous write-downs they took, so the stock was up 2 or 3, or I think it's maybe up 4% today.
Yeah,
and Bank of America had some, you know, whatever was going on there. It was actually up 10% today.
Actually, Goldman Sachs is up 5.52%.
Yeah, that was pretty much the last hour.
102.25.
A lot of that. Huh. Yeah, so 102.25, not 122, right? 102?
Yeah, 102.
Yep. So, it is that time where if it's unexpected in either direction, either way, it gets really played out. For example, out of nowhere yesterday, Crocs, the old shoe guys.
Your friends.
They were for a while. We sold them a while back, made a nice profit, and haven't entered back. And they come out with a little announcement. They said, we're going to fall short on our EPS over the next quarter and over the next year. We think there's a little bit of a slowdown in the kiosk area, and we're not selling as much, blah, 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 blah. Stock is down like 40% today.
39.38, actually.
How ugly is that?
Yeah, it's a falling knife. I mean, if there's ever an example. So the stock fell like a rock from 27-something, I guess, to 16-something. And I always wonder why... if it was worth $27 on Monday.
And upgraded on Monday.
And upgraded, why it's worth $16 on Tuesday.
Yeah. Or why it will be worth $21 next Thursday.
It could be a bounce back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we don't usually do this, but we picked up a very small position in it at about this price.
Yeah. I'm thinking of putting it on the list.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting in that it did fall so hard. Now, remember, liquidity is a little bit light these days, generally speaking, and there isn't – well, more to the point, there's not a lot of conviction for the long term. So therefore, anybody that's holding becomes a weak holder. It is in and out, whichever way the wind blows. And the stock was as high as, I don't know, 1780 this morning, and then it kind of came down throughout the day. So kind of a crazy, situation there. But the bottom line is that this is what is happening with these kind of ranges. And, when you see these kind of ranges, you have to be, I think, extra cautious, because what ends up happening is, you get any of these kind of, any of these kind of moves, it could really wreck a day. Right?
It's ludicrous.
If you're holding a 10% position or something like that in Crocs because it grew and didn't take any profits, or if we were still holding on to it in our little game, for example, if we didn't take that 10% sell stop when we did, as it came back to us, we'd still be holding that, and we'd be down to 40%.
Yeah.
Or more, actually. And that's happening, actually, to a lot of these Momo players, like we call that momentum players.
Yeah.
You know, Netflix, we saw that happen too. I mean, in a really big way.
Yeah, and classic.
That, and it was like, yeah. And we saw Green Mountain Coffee. Finally, somebody's out there saying, hey, there's a problem here. I think it was Einhorn, one of the big hedgies. He came out a couple of days ago and the stuff just dropped. There was a big value conference yesterday. And I was getting text messages from a friend of mine that was there. And
where,
he was telling me
where
who's,
was it?
Who's to, in New York. Hmm. And he was giving me text messages as it was happening. You know, this guy says this, this guy says that. And I got to tell you something. It was unbelievable to watch these stocks when they said, we're shorting this. We're shorting that. I mean, these things just dropped like a rock.
Wow.
Anything. Anything they were talking about. Green Mountain Coffees was one.
So who put this conference on?
It was called the Something Value Conference, which, I don't know, it sounds like a Shorter's conference to me.
Shorter's conference.
Well,
a bunch of very small men came into a room.
We like to short everything.
No, but it was. It was that kind of – they were really negative on a lot of things. Jim Chanos was there talking about China Agricultural Bank. He was short, and Einhorn was short Green Mountain. Another guy was short
How do you spell Chanos' name? I can figure out what conference this was.
C-H-A-N-O-S.
C-H-A-N, okay.
Yeah, the Value Something Conference. A lot of major players were there. You see it? If not, I'll find it.
I got Value Conference Chanos, and I got nothing. I got Investing. It's the Value Investing Conference, yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
The Value Investing Conference. Speaking at the Value Investing Conference, Jim Chanos, president of the Kinetco's associate and a noted short in the market, listed five different sectors and five representative stocks as value traps. Mm-hmm. He lists Chinese banks, or anything China really, commodities companies dependent on a single government, such as VALE, 59% of the revenues from the Chinese demand, liquidating trusts.
Oh, yeah, that one dropped pretty good.
VALE, yeah. Yep. Liquidating trusts such as oil and gas royalty trusts. He believes Exxon XOM is to be an example. Analog to digital distribution, GameStop, GME. Mm-hmm. The idea is that margins will continue to decline, and for value and for profit education, ITT, he calls this a national shame.
Yeah, is that what symbol? ITT or ESI? I think it's ESI, right?
ITT he has here.
Yeah, something. I think that one dropped. I mean, all of these dropped. You should see yesterday when he's at the moment they said this, when the name came out of his mouth.
What are these guys sitting there on their? They got their iPhone at the ready with a button to push. They pop in the symbol as fast as they can as the guy's chatting, and they hit the sell button.
Yep. Yes, or they're doing like what my friend did. He sent me. We didn't act on them, but he sent me text messages that what was going on. If you have a giant group, how you just Twitter it right out?
Yeah,
David Einhorn was there. T2 Partners was there. That's Whitney Tilson. He seems to spend much too much time talking rather than researching. But that's another story. He was the guy that was short Netflix all the way from like 75 to 260.
Oh,
and then bailed out of it like at 240. How crappy does this guy feel?
Yeah. That's not good.
I mean, you gotta feel like crap.
I mean, even I only made one mistake with Netflix.
By the way, there's only one thing worse than that, and that's getting out at 240 and swapping your position and going long. Right?
Yeah, it could happen. I'm sure somebody did. Somebody was buying.
So, anyway, there was a lot of this going on. There's a few other guys speaking too. And it was pretty eventful in that you could see pictures of it. This guy sitting there with the computers.
I'm reading this thing. This is on Seeking Alpha. This little summary. It's like depressing. This conference. Wow. Where's the value? It sounds like everybody was right. The value was no value. Sell right. Everything. Yeah. Newspapers are doomed. Banks are doomed. Well, online media is doomed.
How many people go to the Dower Investing Congress? Or the, you know, you know what I'm saying? They got to think of a better name.
Dower Investing Conference. We should do that one.
Right. The You Will Feel Suicidal After You Leave Here Investing Conference.
Yeah, good point.
Anyway, you know, so, I mean, they got us. What do they need that for?
Yeah, they can listen to our show. We have nothing good to say.
Yeah. So Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, we talked about that. Goldman with a $400 billion loss for the quarter and facing the Volcker rules and – you know, crackdown with the Basel III rules of higher capital ratios and blah, 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 blah. So lots going on there. China's GDP came in last night a little bit lighter than was expected at 9.1%. Hmm. And Asia's really been getting smacked around pretty good. I mean, Hong Kong has had, I think they were down 4.5% last night. You know, because of the downbeat economic news and some of the issues with like Chinos and the housing market and all. I mean, it was really an ugly night.
Yeah,
in Hong
it was
Kong.
Interesting. I was looking at the, I was watching CNBC World. And their whatever they call that show they have, which is that international show, they start running it around 10 o'clock at night, and it goes on all night with the crazy French guy and all the kinds of international people commenting. And they were very interested in the fact that all the Asian markets were actually getting slammed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was because of the – it's just a global – move, you know, when Europe starts moving down and there's concern there, and Angela Merkel says, you know what, there's going to be a great plan, and then comes back and says, you know what, we're not going to get this done. There is a lot of exposure. As a matter of fact, I put somewhere in the notes here that I put up a chart, a couple tables about who owns the Greek debt. From everything that we're seeing, aside from the fact that Greece is, you know, insolvent right now, they're essentially bankrupt. They're just being held up by, you know, just the good grace of European leadership right now is funneling money as best they can there. And by the way, they talked about tonight some additional austerity. At this point, you know, I don't know where they think they're going to get this, you know, water from a rock. It's just not happening. So now we have the about a 98% chance of a Greek default, bankruptcy. And they're talking about revising the 21%.
Where did you get that? Because I haven't noticed that anyone's throwing any number out like 98%.
Go look at just go search for that. You'll find that it is a calculation based on the price of CDS exposure.
So they're thinking there's 2% chance of them recovering without a bankruptcy. Is that what you're saying?
Without a default, yeah. The bonds are being priced that way. Yes.
That's a long shot.
Well, that's why the bonds are so.
Yeah, no, they're outrageous. What are they paying? Like you buy a bond, you immediately get 50%. Twice your money.
Yeah, well, assuming you can get it back. That's right, in a year. Yeah. With 50% on it. So China's GDP came in a little bit lighter than it was expected, and they still have an inflationary problem, which is leading them into – you know, everybody say, you know, wait a minute. If China is going to continue to crack down on the housing situation and on inflation, how are they going to allow for greater growth? As a matter of fact, listen to this asinine statement. The Bank of England, the governor, Mervyn King, he says that he's called China to import more to help solve global financial problems. I mean, why is it China's responsibility to solve their problems? I'm sure China's wondering. Is that a ridiculous statement? I mean, do you think that
– It's border – yeah, well, no, it's ridiculous. China can do whatever it wants. They're not for – I mean, they're China. They can do what they want. They don't have to be kowtowing to what the Bank of England or anybody else wants.
Right. Exactly. How about this?
And besides that, this reminds me of our own banks here in our country, you know, who you can't get loans from, even though since, oh, the interest rates are so low, I don't understand why people aren't getting loans, because they won't give you the loan. I don't care what the interest rate is. But the banks are obviously thinking the following, which is what China must be doing, which is like, okay, yeah, we got all these houses out here, and these guys want to refinance their house. You know, I'm not sure those houses are going to be worth this. I think they could fall more. I don't think we should be loaning money to people who own real estate that may be worth less in a couple of years. That's a decision they made.
Right.
So the Chinese are looking around saying, why are we going to invest in these losers?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like that. China, first of all, it's not the responsibility. Second of all, it's not even part of their world. And third of all, you know, if you want to say, hey, can you be more competitive so that we can – or less competitive like we're trying to do with their currency? Or I mean, just to speak out and say that China should import more when we've actually – and they've set them up to be their own manufacturing machine is just so stupid. It just makes these guys sound ridiculous.
Well, it makes them sound like they don't that they're totally naive about the way things are going. Right. I mean, haven't they looked at their own stuff they buy? It's all made in China.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So that was the first thing. There was also there's a couple of weird things that are going on that I want your opinion on. First of all, Intel did better. Stock is creeping higher over the last several weeks. I have a question for you. What's the deal with AMD? Are they just done? I mean, you have to keep them around almost because if you don't, you have a real problem with an antitrust situation, right?
That would be true.
So they have to be kept around. So you need to give them a couple of bones here and there. But what else are they doing? I haven't heard one thing.
They
have
still
have a new processor.
They have a lot of actually, AMD, I think, is in pretty good shape, considering compared to when it was $2. I think AMD historically, and if you're going to take a look at these things as something that repeats and repeats, what will happen with AMD is at some point when they start to really suffer, they will end up owning ARM, or they're going to buy somebody. They're going to do a typically, last time they did this, I believe they bought a company, and the company had more of the shares than the. In other words, it was actually, it's almost like a reverse merger.
Didn't they buy like ATI or something, or one of those?
No, they did that too, but that was that was one where they didn't pull that stunt. The stunt would be you buy a company that you essentially let run you. It's hard to explain, but I believe that they will pull another one. I mean, the ATI thing took a while to digest, and I think it was a good idea, which was to integrate the processor with the GPU, mm-hmm. at which Intel actually is not as good at this. And then everybody was caught flat-footed, both Intel and AMD, by the iPad, because the iPad doesn't use either one of those chips and doesn't want to. And we're in a moment where we're trying to resolve things. It's going to be another year.
And we're going to talk about the Apple earnings in a minute. We're going to keep everybody on the edge of their seats for a moment and talk about what happened, what went wrong, what went right, what's going on with the Apple iPhone 4S, and all things involved there. But the Intel situation and the AMD, so what you're saying is that AMD basically is going to let themselves just do what they do and then kind of call in a designated hitter to take over.
Pinch hitter.
Pinch hitter. Okay, yeah, I'll give you that. Pinch hitter. To take it over, and then because they understand that they just are not going to be able to be competitive on their own, and they don't know what the hell to do.
That seems to be the way it ends up. And I'm guessing ARM would be the company that would merge with AMD. And
there's also a small one. There's a small company with an M now. What's the name? Not Microchip.
You're not thinking of Marvell.
No, not Marvell. There's a processor company, and they make – oh, I could see their name, too. It begins with an M. Oh, well. They make a lot of stuff for the Androids. I'm sure everybody out there is something chip. Well, I forgot it.
Motorola?
No. We'll talk about them in a second, too. Why don't we talk about them now? So here is officially, if we had a drum roll, the idea of the year, or said differently, the stupid idea of the year. The first one? Motorola is reviving the Razr.
Yeah, I know.
To compete with the iPhone.
Yeah.
Now, you need to say that whole thing in a full sentence. You can't leave any of that out.
It doesn't sound right.
It's two stupid strings of information that are put into one to make it the stupidest idea of the year. Or the highest probability of failure idea. How's that one?
Well, I'm not going to... I think you're probably right, but I'm not going to poo-poo it to this extreme because I think that all they're really doing is reviving the brand name, and they're going to bring out a smartphone similar to an iPhone with the Razr name, and it's going to be really thin because it's Razr thin. I mean, that was the original reason for the naming. And so it's going to be a real thin iPhone. It's going to probably be more colorful and be with metallic kinds of day-glow colors and small pocket cameras. Right. And I think they're going to bring that. I think, I'm just guessing, they're going to do something like that, and that's going to be really where this Razr brand is headed. And
well, let me tell you what I'm going to do.
Maybe they'll call it the iRazr.
Yeah, well, let me tell you what I'm doing here, okay? I am going to revive the Spirograph. Remember that?
Yeah.
To compete with Adobe Photoshop. What do you think?
Well, if you brought out a package of a photo editing package that was as good as Photoshop and you called it the Spirograph, which I think is what we're dealing with here, and we didn't have like a pair of pundits yakking on the podcast and one of them being outrageously cynical, I would say it's probably a winner.
And the second worst idea of the year, it's kind of in the same exact genre, okay? RIM announces today that they have a new operating system to compete with the iPhone.
Yeah, okay. It's possible.
The timing of the RIMs, and by the way, that they believe will be ready sometime next year.
Yeah, okay.
So that's the, I guess, you know, the first one is the stupidest idea of the year, and the second one is the most untimely idea of the year.
Yeah, RIM has got, I don't know what they're going to do. I'm very concerned about them.
What about their outage? What about that outage?
Oh, and that didn't help. I mean, everybody else uses the internet and, you know, the cloud, and RIM has a proprietary system, which is essentially a cloud, but they run it. And then the thing craps out on all these users who are dependent on it. That's terrible. That's inexcusable.
Yeah. They should actually
be. They probably lost customers, by the way.
You know, all I saw on the commercials for the iPhone 4S were all these people saying that are online, you know, getting their phone. Ah, I'm so excited. I can finally get rid of my BlackBerry. That was the interviews.
Yeah.
All over the place. You saw this happen. Wow. The two things they did was they talked about Siri, this ridiculous voice.
Yeah, event. I wrote a column in today's PC Magazine. People should look it up. Siri stands for Steve is Inside.
God. Oh, boy.
Steve is really inside, S-I-R-I. Steve is really inside. And kind of condemning this, because I played with it. It doesn't do any. I mean, what's the point of it? It has a few noticeable flaws that, namely, it's just as bad as the Google Android voice thing. Oh, it's funny because I'm here at home and my son, JC, is moaning about, I don't understand why everyone's all jacked up about Siri. It's just another version of Alice and Eliza. And nobody's mentioning the Google initiative, which came out around the same time, where you can talk to the Google phone in English and it responds in Spanish.
Yeah.
You know about this?
Well, I've seen a few. I just actually looked at a few.
He loaded it up on one of the phones so he can continue to grouse. And it doesn't work either. I mean, it's worse. Right. It's like, what, this thing can't even, you know, we tried to talk to it in French and German, Spanish, English to German. I mean, it was just hopeless. So that doesn't work. The Siri thing is a joke. But everyone's all jacked up about it because it does something once in a while.
I think it's for the people that don't have the iPhone in particular, who don't understand the ease and very low level of menus that you have to get through in order to get something done. So, you know, if you ever played with, let's say, a BlackBerry or some of these other phones, you have to get deep to get some information sometimes. You know, you have to really find things and dig and go through folder structure. And maybe they're thinking that it's really easy. I could just say, oh, call home or something of that nature. Or, you know, where am I? I don't know. You know, who am I? You know, and people are asking things like, oh, what is the meaning of life? And stupid questions like that, you know, like starter computer stuff. Like when I first had my, what was it? The 8080. Was that a Commodore 8080?
No, that would be one of the S100 systems probably. Yeah, Commodore was a 6502.
Oh, yeah. All I could do was basically make banners and make my name appear on the screen multiple times. And we were sitting there all, you know, excited about it, you know. And, you know, this is the kind of thing. It's a very newbie kind of situation. Now, knowing Apple, they may transform this into something much more significant. But at the same time, my understanding was today and yesterday, Apple servers were so bogged down somehow that they were almost out because there's so much usage of this Siri. I guess, does it go to the server? Is that right?
Yeah, apparently it goes to the server. I mean, what it should do if they were doing it right, it just goes straight to India.
Right.
And somebody be listening. Right. Oh, okay, I can do that. And fix, answer your questions. But this goes to the server, and then it goes through a voice recognition thing, and then it goes through a bunch of canned responses, and then can't answer anything, which is mostly, it says, can I look this up on the internet for you? And then it goes and just does a Google search. And okay, so what?
Right. So is this, there's nothing in the phone at all? There's not even the basic components of this that are processed
out of the phone? Not that I know of.
Really? So it's like a Dragon naturally speaking for the iPhone.
Yeah.
You know, they have that. So it's the same kind of, that works pretty well.
Yeah. I mean, all these things work well in a silent, closed, you know, room, padded cell. Right. You take them out on the street and you're not going to get
train.
A train. Oh, forget it.
Oh, so anyway, speaking of Apple, so Apple came out there, you know, the street was very excited about the opportunity that Apple is just going to blow out earnings. Now, they lowballed the guidance at about $5.33 or so. Expectations were for about, I don't know, $7.20 or so on earnings and for the quarter. And next quarter was about $9. Now, Apple has a way of usually lowballing, or at least the last, I don't know, however many quarters, about 25 or 30 quarters, since 2004. So lowballing the quarterly outlook so that they don't get caught, of course. And,
right.
You know, it's just the game they play.
An old game Microsoft perfected, yep. And seems to have forgotten.
Yep. And what happens is that they beat now. So the range of guidance of 5 and change to 7 was pretty large. So, you know, I was talking to my office, what would it take? What would it take to really be disappointing on this quarter's Apple's earnings, considering the fact that we know that the iPhone 4S isn't going to be in there, but we still had, you know, pretty robust sales and iPads and all that. Under $8 would be a real disappointment. That was what the consensus was. So, all right. Earnings come out, and they fell short of the estimate. They were about, I don't know, 10 or 15 cents short of the estimate. And I was like, wow, that's ugly. Well, Apple stock, of course, went vertical, but this time not in the right direction, straight down. Lost about, I don't know, 7 or 8% immediately, down to about 388, 387. And that was kind of interesting. They also missed on revenues. They had a lot less iPhone sales than predicted. And some of that was supposedly due to the fact that a lot of people were waiting for the next generation of phone to come out. I know I was waiting for an iPhone 5 before I did anything. And then you also had iPod sales fell off pretty dramatically. iPad sales, I think, were on. But the big concern was that revenue was not there. And then on top of that, you had an announcement about the guidance, which was really interesting because the guidance was almost matched the expectations for next quarter that analysts put out. And Cook was out there saying that they're going to have the best quarter ever of iPhone sales coming up, which, you know, nobody disagrees with. So I guess what we could say is that really there was a lot of anticipation running into the number. A lot of people probably were buying the stock due to the expectation for the next quarter. And falling short, though, is really, an interesting new trend, the first time since 2004 that Apple actually fell short of expectations.
Somebody told me that. Who follows this said that every iPhone announcement since the original one, take that one off the table, every other iPhone announcement that's ever been done, the stock's always gone down.
When the announcement comes out or after?
Yeah, no, right after. So it comes out and everyone goes, oh, this is disappointing. Boom, down it goes. And for whatever reason. And, I mean, you may attribute it to the fall off in the earnings, but this it looks like a standard chart to me. I don't know.
You know, it's
and it went
it's
back
also,
up, by the way, right?
No, it's down. It's at three. Well, close at about 394.
No, okay,
so it was at 422 earlier.
Yeah, 422. Hmm. Well, saw the thing I sent you though. Somebody's research report is pushing Apple to 550.
Yeah, I know. So, listen, James Altshuler thinks it should be worth like $1,000. I mean, I guess one day it could be. And he thinks the Dow should be at like 50,000 or some ridiculous number.
Okay, well then he's just nuts.
Or maybe it's 100,000, something bizarro. And the thing about Apple is I totally agree that there is some opportunity moving forward, but there is a big question mark right now about whether or not the cost for goods internally, although the margins were a little bit better than expected, they were about 40% or so, or 30, I got to look at that exact number, 38, 40, they were a little bit better than expected. And the numbers looked okay, by the way. For any other company, they'd be great. But for Apple, with the expectation where they were, it was, you know, not as good as was expected. But there really was not any downplaying. There really wasn't any talk about, oh, there's a slowdown here or a slowdown there. I didn't see anything of that. But again, that being the case, if most people will basically not feed their kids for 3 weeks in order to buy an iPhone, you know, what does that say if they're not buying the iPhone at this point? or if expectations, you know, weren't achieved for where they should have been.
Kids probably have starved already.
No, but really, I mean, you know, I mean, people really will not pay their mortgage to buy an iPhone.
Yeah,
they're
I know.
Crazy about
yeah,
it.
I know. It's nuts.
Crazy about it.
And they buy the next one, you know, even though their old one is fine.
Yeah.
Except
yeah.
it's probably scratched up.
Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens. I mean, Google beat nicely. Intel had a decent quarter. So technology has been hit or miss a little bit. Retail has been beat up really badly recently, especially the high-end retail, the Lululemon, the Tiffany's, the Fossil has been obliterated, just absolutely just obliterated. And, you know, so that's kind of the trend going on right now, that there's a big concern about the retail. But at the same time, there's a lot of hope that however it happens, that earnings season is going to be a good one, even considering all the mishigas in Europe. So, you know, and then Ben Bernanke comes out today and he talks about that he's going to increase, and then kind of markets paused, right? Just on the word increase. You can almost see it. Communication and transparency. You know what that means?
Yeah, it means he's going to do more press conferences. He's like the first guy that started doing these things, you know, in a major way. And so what he's going to do now is more, because I guess he loves the camera. He went on 60 Minutes twice, I think, so far. Mm-hmm. Loves the camera, loves to, like, blather on. And the transparency part, I have no idea. It's probably got something to do with Ron Paul's finance committee hounding them to do stuff, and to, you know, give reports or something. So instead of, like, just following the, you know, the kind of the edicts of Congress, here's your material, he's going to take credit for this. We're now delivering this material as though he hasn't been forced to do it. I think it's you know, just crap.
I think the transparency is all about this whole discussion of communication transparency. Is all about the idea that, yeah, he's going to be out there talking a bit more. He's going to have the Fed speakers out there a bit more and being more transparent about showing about what their plans are for the future, how they're going to attack the current situation, whether it's a slowdown or maybe an inflationary situation, and how they're going to go about doing that so that it's more open to the public and you can find out and there's not as much guessing. And the bottom line is it's all about the rhetoric, you know, talking up the economy or talking down the economy. I wrote a whole piece about this in this quarter's economic commentary, as a matter of fact.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't see any upside to anything.
So I wanted to mention two things. First of all, you know, that the DH Unplugged podcast, as well as the Disciplined Investor, I think No Agenda has been nominated for a podcast award. Did you see that?
Yep.
The annual podcast awards?
Yeah. Who does these awards?
You know, we might get
So this is the year that they're not giving anybody any money. So uh-huh. I figure this is the year that we might win one.
Yeah, we'll probably get first place across the board. So here's what you do. This is a people's choice kind of thing. So go over to podcastawards.com and you can vote every single day. That's right. Get all your friends to do it too. Vote for one of the shows that you love the most. You could vote for, we're in different categories. So I think there's business, there's education, I think we're in Crap Talk or something like that. You know, just go vote for DH Unplugged and Disciplined Investor and The Winning Investor and No Agenda, all the ones that you love out there at podcastawards.com. Hey, John, have you heard about or looked into this whole 999 plan?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, it won't work, and it's kind of an interesting gimmick. But I see you've renamed it the 666 plan. And the guy's name is Kane, by the way.
Right, right. You know, this is a whole, you know, we should know before we get involved. Is that what you're saying?
Well, Kane and Abel.
Yep. Well, the...
Raising Kane.
Yeah, exactly. Here's the deal. So the presidential hopeful candidate for the Republican Party is talking about a new tax plan. You know, you got to have a platform, right? So here's the deal. 999 makes it very easy. 9% corporate tax, 9% personal tax, and then 9% additional federal sales tax. Very simple. I watched him explain this, I think on Meet the Press maybe or some other show this weekend. And when asked and pressed pretty hard about, well, how is this going to work and how are people going to deal with this extra 9% federal tax on goods? You know, when you go to a store now, you may pay 5, 6, 7% for sales tax, state sales tax. Now you got another 9%. He says, no, you don't. Even though it's an extra 9%, people are not going to be paying that because they're getting all sorts of other benefits. For example, they're paying less on their federal taxes. Okay, I'll go with that. But the second thing is that it will also help businesses because it will make them more competitive, make the products more competitive, which I didn't get at all. Do you have any comments on that?
It's nuts. By the way, I do not like the value-added tax under any circumstances. Right. It's the worst thing you can do to people. Because first it's 9%, then it's, let's make it 10. Oh, let's make it 11. The next thing you know, you're like in some countries it's like 15, 20% because it's the easiest way to get money. So that's bogus. The other thing is, I think part of his argument is that if you buy used products, there's no tax at all.
Yeah, yeah. What kind of used products do you buy? Give me an example.
My daughter likes to go to used clothing stores and buy vintage dresses and blouses and things like that.
Okay. So you can buy that. You can maybe buy used cars. So,
which is usually, by the way, the total budget for that's like $5 a month.
Mm-hmm. And
you can buy a used car. You can buy a used car. That's a lot of
money. Car. You can buy a used computer, maybe.
Mm.
You know, you could buy what else? Is a house used? I guess maybe.
Oh, there you go. Used house.
Used house. Now, tell me something. How does that help industry? It's basically on a barter system, right? I mean, essentially, you're going, you know, passing it back and forth between people, not business. So how does it help business and help then create employment? Because I seem to have missed that point.
Well, that is the conundrum. It doesn't.
And then, okay. And then the other thing is, if you have an additional 9% sales tax, let's rename that. Let's rename that a consumption tax, because you're not going to pay the tax if you don't buy something or consume it or use it, right? So if you're not going to buy, you may be dissuaded from actually going buying something if it's an extra 9% price tag on it, thereby not consuming it, thereby bringing down retail sales, and then flowing through back to the manufacturer. And I ask the question once again, how does that put on employment?
Again, it doesn't. It tends to do just the opposite. So what you've done, in fact, I'm surprised. I was watching the Republican debates tonight. And it would behoove somebody to point this out. But you're right. It's so far, it does nothing.
Okay, so that's first of all. Then you have a 9% flat tax, essentially, right? Now, there's a whole level of people that make less than the amount of money required to pay income tax on because they're at a lower level. They could have families and they are exempt or whatever. I'm not talking about the rich people that find loopholes. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about your average Joe, average Jane. They have a family and they're making whatever they're making, but they're at a level that they're not paying tax or very little tax. Now, you're going to tax them 9% and take away all those very, you know, take away the deductions, because that's what he's talking about, taking away all the different things that are involved in the tax code and just making it very easy that whatever your income is, you pay 9%. So now you're going to have them pay 9%, and then you're going to have the wealthy individuals and the middle class paying 9%. And this seems to be somehow, I don't know, it seems to be now you're going to tax people more at the lower end who can't pay already. How does that work?
It doesn't seem to pass muster.
Mm. And then you're going to have tax on corporations, a 9% tax, flat tax. Okay, so they're going to save a lot of money there. Now, this I'll give you. If you go from, I'm picking a number, 30%, 25% corporate tax rate to 9, okay, you save a lot of money. Therefore, you have extra money that you could do a few things with. You could reduce the prices on the goods you sell. Is that going to happen?
I've never noticed that to happen.
Hmm? It could happen, though.
It could theoretically happen if it was like a fire sale, then it would happen.
Okay. So that could be competitive. I could see that. But then what you're doing is you're, again, making a stalling point because you just shifted the corporate tax to the individual. So any savings that you pass on, they have to pay in taxes if they buy it. So, again, what do you just do? I don't see. And if they do reduce the prices, they can't put on more people for employment because they still have the same profit line. So, therefore, they have to actually keep the money, not reduce the prices, put on more people. When the prices are the same, now you're paying an extra 9% on them.
Which will kill sales, right.
Kill sales, which then again, people have to be fired because they don't have the whole thing. This is a gigantic circular reference in Excel, and even Excel will tell you this won't work. I'm not suggesting that the current plan is what we have is working either, because it's not. And there's a lot, you know, the deficits are ridiculous. But this seems to be too simplistic, too almost, you know, made for TV. That you have this something as cute as the 9-9. I mean, did you calculate that 9 was the right number? Or just happens to be a nice sequence that they're the same numbers?
Yeah. No, you know I think it's wide open for the exact criticism. You just nailed it.
Okay. So yeah. There we go.
No, you're right.
So I just doubt. Yeah,
Kane is not running for president anyway. He's running for vice president.
Ah. Outing Christie for that post?
Yeah. No, Kane is a good choice for vice president. I thought Perry was going to be the guy because he kind of ran. He's running for vice president, too, but seems to be an idiot.
Oh, I'd rather have Biden back. I mean, seriously. I mean, unfortunately, while Perry has a good image and he has a presidential appearance, posture, just an overall. But then he opens his mouth.
Yeah. He said nuclear today.
So he's another. He's back. We're back to the George Bush.
It's worse. Like somebody said, if you take the two of them, George Bush is the smart one. So he's got a problem. And they got into a hissy fit. Him and Romney went at each other. It was quite good. It was a very good debate. If you have it on tape or can watch it sometime, it's quite this the most amusing. Apparently, these debates are getting great ratings, unlike anything in the past. And there's something like 10 more of them or 12 more of them they want to put on, and all the candidates are more than happy to do them. So it's like free, you know, programming. Yeah. It's a bonanza for the TV people.
Well, I mean, if you recall, the McCain and Obama debates were cordial and boring.
Yeah, these are not. These are good. These are very exciting. It's fun.
Yeah, this is kind of like the first part of the American Idol where all these wacko people are trying out. It's kind of like what it is, right?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, instead of the end product where you just see all the, you know, the finely polished people with
and
the
what's cool, music. They've had so many of these debates. They have, you know, one goes to Bloomberg, one goes to CNBC, one goes to, I guess, Fox had one, this was CNN. They all get to kind of have their own format, so they all do them a little differently. And this one was just really opening it up for people grousing at each other. It was quite very entertaining.
Which one was that? Was that the one on not Fox, was it?
CNN. Was this is the CNN one is the one tonight, and that's the one that's the best so far.
The only other thing I want to mention to you is just an idea I want to kind of stick in your head and maybe bring up to people's attention. There is a general concept out there that the dollar going down is a risk-on trade, meaning, you know, you buy the materials, you buy the banks, you buy the consumer discretionary. In other words, that it's a good thing, right? And the euro going up, which is opposite of that, is also a good thing, meaning that things are getting better in Europe and there's a lot of belief in the euro. But you just have to wonder just for a moment, why is the euro keep going up, even though it comes down a few times here and there? But why does it keep on just edging up with all these problems, with the Spain downgrade, with the Italian banks downgrade, with the Portugal downgrade, with France on watch and being threatened essentially last week? You know, and all of this going on, it just seems like the euro just keeps on nudging higher. I mean, it comes down a little bit, but then it nudges higher. Why is that? It doesn't seem logical, does it?
No, you have a reason?
I think so. It's something I've been talking about because I've been scratching my head about this for a long while, by the way. And it seems that one of the things that's happening right now is there's a major liquidity crunch in the banks over in Europe, in particular in France and Spain, et cetera. And one of the problems is that there's no dollars available. In other words, most of the dollar investments through mutual funds and various places have been pulled. $70 billion was pulled out last month from U.S.-based mutual funds, et cetera, out of the banks of Europe. So they are very short on dollar-denominated funding, which is why last month the U.S. agreed to doing these dollar swap arrangements because they just, you know, it was frozen the markets. So the thing is that right now a lot of these assets are being sold off also. So what they're doing is they need to repatriate the euro at this point, just like what happened in Japan after the earthquake. There was this gigantic spike in the Japanese yen because there was an enormous repatriation required to pay for all the damage. Now, if you think about the European financial situation like an earthquake, right, you know, that has to be repaid or money has to go into the system, they're going to have to convert back into euros. So what's happening is these banks now are they have this open swap that they have with the Fed so they can do what they need to do. At the same time, they're selling off all of their assets, their loans that are dollar denominated, and they're actually driving down the dollar and bringing the euro back so that when and if a default occurs in Greece, they have the euros ready to go to fund whatever needs to be funded if there's a major haircut. So it seems like a euro repatriation act, repatriation process is going on rather than what is perceived to be a massive risk on trade. Just food for thought.
I like it. I've never heard it, but I like it.
If that is the case, this is one massive head fake short squeeze that's going on.
And what's the end result?
The end result could be, if it is right, and again, it seems like the more logical answer than what's going on with all the economics being, you know, really ugly, us probably being in a recession at this point right now in the United States, and clearly Europe going into recession, it would happen is that the markets are setting themselves up for a return and back to a test of the lows again. I mean, that just seems logical to me, and especially with the spotty earnings coming in.
Okay. Well, let's look at our stocks then.
Okay. Let's head on over to
stocks. Seems like time enough.
Yep. And for some reason, I don't know why this is. I got to go back here.
So we got a couple of things. Some of our shorts are not
leaky.
Yeah, they're out.
The
apple's kind of still hanging in there. It's about to get.
And you'll be good tomorrow.
Yeah, and Aflac, by the way, is you're done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll clean that up. We have some profit on that. That was the last 2 or 3 days that moved. We had some profit still on that.
Netflix is looking good. Baidu is the only buy on the thing that we have. Is outstanding. Very good.
Yeah, we
call.
Actually
you did a great call on that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, that was the perfect. We actually bought it right at 104. I think it was at 103.50 that day. It got down to, and then it just went straight up. And the other two I had for last week, and the one Cliffs Natural Resources. This is an interesting. This is a
Cliffs Bar.
No, it sounds like it is.
No,
it's coal.
Oh.
Now, obviously, when the risk on trade is there, this will do very well. This thing moves around. I think yesterday when the markets were down. On Monday, this was down 7%, then it goes up to 5%, 8%, then it goes down again. You know, we're in the zone, a little bit higher than this, but right about in the zone for the top end of Cliffs. And if the markets do come down, this will get smacked, but good. So we're going to put a short on this. KLN Tencor is it's a chip company, if you will, a semiconductor chip / company. Got great ratings. We think it's very highly rated. Right now, we think it's still a very good stock. We'll see what happens. So this was really for last week, but I have no problem putting it on for this week.
All right. Well, I'm going to I want to go long on Crocs.
Okay.
As a bounce, which I've been successful with in the past. And I've got nothing else. I'm looking for shorts. I'm expecting a few to crop up in the next week. Right now, I'm not sure how things stand.
The charts on most stocks are what we call broken right now. There's really a very difficult area because of all this massive movement, and you have these gaps all over the place. And gaps are known to fill pretty quickly. And when that happens, you oftentimes have more gaps. And that's creating a big problem for the charts. In terms of fundamentals, you could say there are some really quality names out there. But some of these names have run up just amazingly over the last 2 weeks. It took 11 weeks to drag the market down and about 6 days to drive it back up most of the way. From about 1,220 or so down to about 1,100. It took about 11 weeks. And it took about 6 days to get back right to the top again.
Well, yeah, that's kind of what we're looking at.
And that's the kind of environment you're in. So, I mean, it could go either way. And right now what happened was, oil is an interesting play. I mean, gold has got smacked today. It goes back and forth between gold and silver every day. Gold goes down, silver goes down, gold goes up, then silver goes up. You know, it's back and forth. And it's all based on the dollar and the euro, obviously. And again, back to the fund liquidation. When things start getting ugly, they get ugly. you know, 2% day is really a rough day on markets lately. So, and not so much. I mean, we see some good things on the upside also on the up days. But again, it's all related to, you know, Europe. That's why Aflac was up 5.5% today. The financials were just on fire.
Hmm.
Just on fire today. You know, I would be short the financials. There's a triple short financial after what they did today ran up.
Yeah,
that's
what
an interesting
it?
Play. That's FAZ.
Hmm.
That's a pretty volatile one. You got to put your stops a little bit wider on that. It was up, I think it was down about 15 or 14% today, something like that.
Hmm. That would be kind of fun. But no.
Okay, thank you, but no.
Thank
well,
you,
we'll stick
no.
with these. We'll stick with these, and we'll clean up the spreadsheet. This you can go over to dhunplugged.com, and on the bottom of each of the show notes, there is a area to click where you could find the spreadsheet that is we track. It's a live spreadsheet about through Google. Of course, these are just names that we're talking about. These are not recommendations to buy or sell any security. You have to seek your own advice and do your own research before you do any of these, and some of these positions may be owned either personally or by clients of Horowitz & Company or John C. Dvorak.
I got nothing.
Okay, I hear you.
But it could be. I mean, but I don't.
Well, but we'll put that on when it is actually when it actually Baidu we have. So we sold a Baidu today actually.
Hmm. Let me see how it does.
And sold it. And that's about the story.
Okay. Well, then we'll talk again next Tuesday. Sorry for everybody out there who missed us last week.
Yep.
We tried to keep. We have a pretty good audience now. It seems as though we have. It's not bad. Good numbers. And
well,
so,
and it makes so, and so that could even supercharge the voting over at podcastawards.com.
Yes,
right?
if people are listening to this podcast, please go to podcastawards.com and vote for it and the other podcasts. No
yeah,
Agenda Show
cool.
And whatever that thing you've got. Disciplined Investor.
Yeah. By the way, had Harry Dent on last week or the week before.
Again.
He's got a new book out, and it's something, you know.
He's always showing up when he's got a book out.
Yeah, well, and funny enough, the title, The Next Great Crash Ahead.
Isn't this the one he just pretty? Yeah, okay.
No, the last
well, at
one
least
was
he's
the
consistent.
Next crash is the Great Crash.
The Great Crash. Okay, this is the next.
Yeah, this is it's bigger. It gets bigger.
Bigger.
And I asked him about his call for Dow 30,000 back in 1990, and boy, did he get surly.
Really?
Oh, he says, if you didn't like the call, we were right directionally. If you didn't, you're an idiot. And he went on from there. So
good.
He stuck by his directional call, but so it went up to 15,000, not 30. So did you not be not happy? You know, so
he's a little touchy.
Yeah, well, he was. I think he's been asked that a few times, I guess.
Yeah, I'm sure you're probably just another guy asking it.
Yep.
All right, we'll talk again next Tuesday then.
Okay, John C.
Adios.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.